Hello and welcome to another episode of the County Cricket Podcast in association with our friends at Bear Crickets. I'm your host, Aaron, aka the Cricket Connoisseur, and joining me on my left for tonight's very special episode of TCCP is none other than Brad Francis, a full-time apprentice groundsman at the Utilita Bowl. So Brad, first things first, mates, it's an absolute pleasure to welcome you here onto the podcast for chats about all things county cricket and the wonderful world of the ground staff. I've got to ask, mate, how's your day been so far?
It's been all right, thank you. And thank you for having me on. It's been an absolute pleasure. But yeah, it's been okay. It's been one of those days where the weather's just got hold of you and there's not a lot you can do.
Well, you certainly can't. And how has the weather been down on the South Coast? Because here in the West Midlands, it has been absolutely atrocious. It's been hailing. It's been downpours all day, to be honest. But in terms of the weather down in Southampton, how's it been recently?
It's been pretty poor, to say the least. I don't know where it gets its reputation for being the sunny south, because it's been raining quite a lot recently. We've had a few days where, it's been dry for a period of day and then it's a nice sunny day. You can get out working and cutting. But yeah, recently it has been wet.
Yeah, it certainly has. But fingers crossed that the weather will improve, because as of this recording, we're around about 9 days from the start of the county season. And Brad, I think It goes without saying, but I think the pair of us incredibly excited about the prospects of this new season.
Yeah, 100%. I think, this is part of the job we all live for, really. The season starting, and it just gets really exciting, really. The build-up, we start covering pitches and preparing them, and it sort of just leads up to the exciting bang and the start of the season. It's all kicking off, really, and that's it until September, I suppose.
It is. It's difficult, isn't it? It is a toil at times, as we'll probably discuss in more detail as the podcast progresses. But just before we get into our wider chats about groundskeeping and your cricketing journey, actually, Brad, just touch in upon this past winter, because it has been incredibly wet, hasn't it? It's been a very damp winter. We've not had as much snow this year, but it's just been replaced by torrential rain. It seems as though it's rained every single day, and we've seen up and down the country, in particular at a ground like New Road, the ground staff have been absolutely pelted over the course of these past 6 months. So for the team at the Utilita Bowl, have you actually found this past winter in terms of the ground preparation and, of course, battling all of that atrocious weather?
I think if you speak to every groundsman, really, it's not easy. We've got quite a lot of pitches to prepare, net blocks to cover up. The weather's been very poor at times and it makes our lives so much harder. The rain's just, it takes control of you, really. We can't do anything about it. Pitches getting wet, it's just sort of demoralising to take the covers off and see a bit of water's gone underneath or something's just wet. And, it really ruins your day, to be honest.
It's a thankless job at times, isn't it, being a member of the ground staff? There's so many different factors which come into the preparation of a pitch, which, to be honest, I think a lot of us as fans actually don't quite appreciate. This is a year-round job, and the standards and the expectations are incredibly high, in particular for you guys at the Utilita Bowl, because it's a test venue, isn't it? You want to be creating some of the finest pitches in the entire country. So it is a very, very difficult job. But then again, when it's the start of the season and you do get one of those pristine pitches, and let's say in your case, Brad, you've just witnessed a Hampshire victory, it does make it all worth it in the end, doesn't it?
100%. We just had the two pre-season friendlies. We had Middlesex last week and we had Worcester, actually, a couple of days ago. And, it was an interesting pitch, to say the least, but it was a good bit of practice for the players because, the ball's moving around a bit, but that's what they're going to face up in the upcoming few weeks, with the pitches being a bit softer and a bit greener. I just think it's good to see us getting playing cricket again. I think other counties are struggling to produce pitches. And being able to get outside is just another good thing. And seeing, people in the stands, it's just one of those things you think, yeah, we've done a good job.
You certainly have. And in terms of those pre-season friendlies, In recent days, we've witnessed Hampshire's new recruits, Ali Orr, hit his first century, yes. And yes, it's not a first-class match or anything like that, but he looked incredibly good and incredibly classy at the crease. In terms of that signing, how do you reckon he'll get on this season? Because he is just one of those most aesthetically pleasing cricketers in the entire country right now.
Yeah, you know, he's definitely been a good signing for us. We'll see more of him to come. But in terms of what we need an opening batter. And he looked in really good nick against Worcester with that half century. And then, you know, it just looks like a good, yeah, like you said, a nice player to watch. He's a very interesting technique, but if he gets runs on the board, you can't really argue with it.
No, you certainly can't. And Ali Orr does just have that knack, that ability of scoring runs in the first class format. I think his average at the moment is hovering just around 40. I think it's 39.93, if my memory does serve me correctly, but he's a serious cricketer. I think back to 2022, and he racked up over 1,000 runs for Sussex in a single championship campaign. And to be honest, he looks to have hit the ground running at Hampshire as well. So heading into that Durham game, and obviously for the rest of the season, across formats, yeah, I'd definitely recommend keeping a very, very close eye on Ali Orr's progress this season in a Hampshire shirt. But Brad, before we touch upon the 2024 season in more detail, right, I feel like we may have jumped the gun ever so slightly in terms of your journey into the world of groundskeeping as a career. But just before we touch upon this season and we talk about the industry in a lot more depth, I just wanted to transport you all the way back to the origins of your journey in cricket as a whole, really, if I may. So what were your earliest ever memories of cricket, either playing or watching this simply magnificent game?
So, yeah, obviously we go back, well, about 18, 19 years. And my first introduction to cricket, I suppose, was going up to watch my dad play at East and West Hendry Cricket Club in Oxfordshire. An unbelievable ground. It's one of the nicest in the county. It all started there, really. And that started the love of groundkeeping. But, you know, just watching and growing up with the game, watching and playing in the nets. And when I was old enough, I started playing in the junior side at Fair Oak, which is just down the road from me, about 5-10 minute drive. And that's where I come through the junior academies, and played a season or two with the men's teams. And then I thought, I'm going to go back up and play at Hendred, just purely for the love of the club, people that, you know, you've met along the way, and just make it nice and special, really.
It certainly does. And I think it's important, isn't it, regardless of the career you go into in cricket, just to kind of remember your roots in the game.
Yeah.
Because without these village clubs, they are the lifeblood of English and Welsh cricket. It's where everybody's journey seems to begin. And I'm glad that you've still got that connection with East and West Hendred, because they're a good club, aren't they? And actually, in recent seasons in the Cherwell League, I think the first have had a couple of promotions, if I'm not mistaken.
Yeah, 100%. I think we've hosted quite a few finals in recent years, especially before I was born as well. And it just reflects really what the club has done, the ground staff, Ivan Mulford and Peter Beckley, what they've done as well to produce unbelievable pitches as well. The smallest square, I think we have 8 pitches there, and every week it's just a really nice pitch, hard, nice carry, nice bounce. And it reflects really, like you just say, the first team have been successful in recent years. So a few years ago, OCA, the Oxfordshire Cricket Association, merged with the Cherwell, and they've just really took off since then. We signed another overseas this year from Australia, and yeah, they're progressing really well and look to go up closer to Division 1.
Well, fingers crossed that they can, because that would be brilliant, wouldn't it, to be honest? I mean, I've been looking on Play Cricket before this podcast in terms of the development and progression of the first, and it is just this steady rise, isn't it, towards the top tiers. So wishing East and West Hendred all the very best of luck heading into this season, because of course the village season isn't actually that far away either, is it, in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah, well, I was up there on Sunday actually helping out on the ground, and it's coming together well. And I think the first week of May is our first league game. So it's not long. It's not long. And I think preparations will start getting underway in terms of pitches being created. And yeah, it's all starting to come together.
Isn't it just a wonderful time of season, to be honest, here in England and Wales? Because we've got the county season starting in less than 10 days, and then obviously the recreational game coming back into our lives in late April slash May, depending on where you're based in the country. So it is a very, very exciting time of year. And in terms of playing cricket, Brad, just before we touch upon the arts of groundskeeping and the industry as a whole, in terms of those early days, did you have any idols, any influences, any role models in the game of cricket who you tried to emulate in those early years, per se?
Yeah, I think it's a very good question. I think everyone has their role models and everyone's different. Personally, for me, I've always looked up to Joe Root. I just think he's a quality batsman, really humble guy as well. And yeah, his record speaks for itself as a number three, number four. Just unbelievable. And the amount of runs in tests he scored, it's just, you know, like I say, it speaks for itself. Just an incredible player to watch. Classy, very elegant, and yeah, unbelievable, really.
He certainly is. And again, I think it is that word, isn't it? The overriding word of Joe Root's career is just class. It's quality, it's refinements, it's elegance on the cricket field. He's a special cricketer to watch, isn't he? Regardless of the format as well. You know, I think back to 2016, and this isn't in Test or ODI cricket. It was actually in the T20 World Cup, and it was that knock against South Africa in that ludicrous run chase in Mumbai. And I just think back to then, and I thought, you know what? Is there anything this man can't do? Because he just takes away opposition bowlers almost systematically, doesn't he? And it is that old cliche phrase on the comms where they say, 1 minute he's on one, and then the next minute you look back on the screen and he's on 40. He is that style of cricketer, isn't he? Just accumulates runs with such ease and grace out in the middle. And this might be a difficult question, to be honest, Brad, and apologies if it does put you on the spot here, but what would you say over the years has been your favourite Joe Root moment?
254 against Pakistan. I can't remember where it was. It's either it might have been at Headingley or Trent Bridge. I can't remember exactly, but yeah, he just made it look so easy. 250, you know, to do it the way he did as well. It just, yeah, like I say, elegant, yeah, and just makes batting look fun, and inspires so many kids as well, and that shows a true role model, humble, brilliant player to watch, and he's a nice guy as well.
He certainly is, and again, I think with Joe Root, there's so many different ways in which you can describe him off the field as well. As you mentioned, he's such a good role model. He's a fantastic ambassador, isn't he, for the English game. And yeah, I think if we're thinking of the same innings, that was 2016 as well, wasn't it?
Yes, I'm pretty sure it was, yeah.
I'm just thinking it might have been Manchester, you know. Come to think of it, it might have been Old Trafford.
May well have been. Actually, I think it might have been, yeah, I recall.
Yeah, the only reason I say that, I seem to recall that was a really high score in innings, wasn't it, for England as a whole?
Yeah.
Because Cook also scored a ton.
Talking about.
Yeah, I think it was Manchester. I think it might have been Manchester. Someone out there listening, you'll have to let us know, to be honest, because we probably won't have time to...
So many games of cricket, you can't remember all of them.
No, you can't. Trust me. I know the feeling, to be honest, Brad. Honestly.
How many times you watch it over on YouTube, you still forget.
You do. But again, that's just a testament, isn't it, to Joe Root's class and quality.
100%, yeah.
You know, he's produced so many knocks over the years. You think even back to the India series that's just gone by as well. That century, we talk about class's permanence and form being temporary. I mean, he's just a brilliant cricketer. And to be honest, we probably could discuss Joe Root for the remainder of today's podcast. He's just an absolute legend of the English game. But just taking the focus away from the playing aspects of this wonderful sport, Brad, just to get us back on track to the world of groundskeeping. First and foremost, how did you get into that as a hobby or even as a career, per se? Because for some people, it is quite niche, isn't it? Let's face it.
Yes.
When people think about cricket, They might want to be a player. They might want to be a coach. They might want to go into the media side of things and be a broadcaster or a presenter. You don't get too many people actively wanting to be on the ground staff. So in terms of that journey in the first place, where does that actually originate?
So funnily enough, all of the roles that you just listed in cricket, I wanted to be when I was younger. I wanted to be a player, obviously, like everyone did. And you sort of soon realise that you're not that good enough, and then reality starts slipping away. And when I was younger, I think I was about 7 or 8. You know, I was up at East and West Hendred, sat on the roller with the groundsman. And then you get a bit older, you can sweep the wicket and remark the lines and cut the pitches after the game when you get a bit older, when you trust me to do so. And yeah, I think you just sort of fall in love with it, really. You end up doing jobs around the ground. And it's one of those where it's very aesthetically pleasing to see what you've done sort of pay off. Obviously, I didn't do any of it, but just to sort of contribute and look at the wicket and think, yeah, I sort of helped on that, and that looks quite good.
100%. And it is rewarding, isn't it, to be honest, to see the efforts of your labour actually paying off. Because if someone makes a comment saying, like, the pitch was an absolute belter today, that must make you feel brilliant inside. You know, when you do have that feedback from the players, it just makes your heart smile, to be honest, on the inside. And in terms of groundskeeping as an industry, in those early years, Brad, what was it about the actual art form itself which drew you in the first place? Because you mentioned there about seeing the ground staff at East and West Hendred, but what was it about groundskeeping in particular which actually captured your imagination in those early years, per se?
I think, like I say, it's just watching it. And I've always loved machines and stuff like that, and just watching things happen. And I think, I want to do that. And I've been at the Aegeus Bowl, obviously now the Utility Bowl, when I was younger. And staying behind just to watch just what they do on the ground and cutting and, you know, marking, blowing, covering up. And it just thinks, you know, if I'm not really a cricketer, that's the closest I'm ever going to get to with all the players and staff and coaches like that. So, and it's a job that I, you know, wanted to do since I was young. I had many options I could have in careers, and I thought, do you know what, I'm gonna give it a go, see if I like it, and here I am another 4 seasons later.
Exactly. It's funny, isn't it, to be honest, how life works out at certain points and where life takes you, because it is a very, very satisfying job. And obviously, I'm saying that from an outsider's perspective, right? I'm saying that from having had discussions with ground staff across the country, actually across sports as well. I'm including football and rugby and golf into this as well. For those who have listened to the Ben Cotton podcast, he's gone from being a professional cricketer to being a golf greenskeeper, which is an incredible change of career. But he's absolutely loving it, because it is a really, really good career. And one of the biggest benefits of it is also the fact that not only are you in close proximity to the players and these world-class facilities and these iconic venues, but you're also outside. And there is just something which, I don't know, almost captivates people about working in the outdoors. And I just wanted to touch upon that in a bit more detail, if I could actually, Brad. In terms of groundskeeping as a career, what do you say is your favourite aspects of this job? Why do you actually love being on the ground staff so much?
I think, yeah, you know, you touch on the weather. Obviously, it's a bit of a pain at the moment because it's so wet. But in the summer, you know, you're outside all day in the sun. It's not a chilled out job, as people make it think. It's not stress free. But it's just rewarding to see. You look around, you're sat in the tunnel on a gator. You look around the stands and it's full of people. They're all watching what you produce. They're all looking at your pitch or looking at your ground. And I think seeing high scores on the scoreboard or just the grass looking really nice and striped and green, pitches playing well, like I say, and it just sort of makes you think this is what we really do it for, really. And it definitely captures the interest of other people when they watch us, what we do after the games and stuff like that. And I think that just makes it all really worthwhile.
100%. And there is an interest, isn't there, to be honest, with county cricket fans. So I'll just bring in my experience from Edgbaston. Every single time it's the lunch interval at the fortress, Gary and his team always do a chat out in the Midlands. You get a load of people crowding around the middle, looking at the surface and listening to his lectures about what actually goes into ground preparation, because it is fascinating, isn't it? Let's face it. And I think in a sport like cricket, people are so invested in not only the pitch, but the game itself, that there is that underlying interest, isn't there, into actually what produces these cricket pitches. And for yourself, Brad, what makes a good cricket pitch, in your opinion? Because different ground staff have different opinions on this. So some might like having a bit of extra grass. Some might prefer a flat deck and they want to see, you know, big high scores. Look at the Oval, for example. It has been renowned for it in recent years. In your view, what would make the perfect cricket pitch in terms of the attributes, the characteristics and the traits of that surface?
I think that's a really good question, actually. And like you say, you'll get a lot of different opinions. But if you were asking me, I'm very new to ground preparation. But if I was to prepare a pitch, let's say for a test match, I'd want good grass coverage, a nice strawy colour, like a browny yellowy colour. I think the first two days, you want to see a lot of good pace of bounce and carry. So an even contest between bat and ball, especially on day one, you'll see a lot of movement off the seam and swing. So the bowlers get their bit and the batsmen get their bit. And then towards the end, you see, obviously, your pitch always deteriorates. And the footholds start appearing and you see the spinners come into the attack. And I think where you get the all-round good score, wickets on the board, and everyone doing their bit, I think that shows that you've made a good pitch. And the scoreboard normally reflects for itself. If you get scores above 300, 350, and especially the first two innings, you're looking at, you know, a decent track.
You certainly are. And again, it's a testament, isn't it, to the hard work which goes into the pitch preparation when you do have a game which goes like that. Because I think that is the standard answer, to be honest, when it comes to first-class venues in England and Wales. We do want to see the same bowlers in the game, primarily in days one and two, even into day three. But heading into late day three and four, that's where the spinners can come into their own. And obviously down at the Utility Bowl, you've got quite a good one in the shape of Liam Dawson. He certainly exploits those footmarks to great effect over the course of a county season. And it is just fascinating, isn't it, in terms of how this surface, right, it's essentially grass and mud, isn't it, at the at the most basic level, how this has such an impact on this sport. I don't think there's another sport quite like cricket where the surface has as big of an impact. I mean, you could maybe argue it for tennis, right, because you've got different surface types. So you've got clay, you've got asphalt, you've got grass at Wimbledon as well. But in terms of a standard pitch, I don't think anything comes even remotely close to cricket. And in terms of the pitch preparation, we're going to go into a little bit more of the technical aspects here, Brad, to be honest. So just a warning in advance to the listeners, we might get a little bit nerdy here when we're talking about this aspect of groundskeeping. But in terms of the preparation of those pitches in Southampton, let's start right at the end of, let's say, the 2023 season. What are the processes and how do you guys actually get that pitch ready ahead of the start of a new season? So in terms of that timeline from, let's say, late September through to late March, early April, what's the process and what is the technique of actually preparing those surfaces at the Utility Bowl?
That is a very good question. And I think a lot of grounds would have similar views. So at the end of the year, I think the last game we had a Coro rented out for a couple of weeks, which basically digs grooves into the square and takes out basically a chunk of the turf. And then you seed it a few times, put holes, so the seed goes into the holes, and then you top dress it with loam. And then basically it's just keeping it decent moisture level from then until it starts to rain, and then you just start seeing grass grow up, really. And then that's obviously cutting it when you can around the winter months, because it does get very wet, water seeing in the middle, and it's, you know, feeding it, treating it, making sure it's very healthy. You're green and full, and if your squares are looking a bit thin, you probably overseed it sort of around February time, I suppose. Really depends on the weather. And then, yeah, now it starts about pre-season rolling. So we start pre-season rolling around February or whenever you can get on, really, whenever it's dry enough. And then, yeah, now it's cutting out pitches and rolling, and you don't need to do any watering now for obvious reasons. Keeping it dry is the main thing. No, keeping it dry.
Absolutely, because yeah, as we've touched upon at length in today's podcast, it's been a wet winter. I think there's probably enough moisture already in the air and, of course, in the surface as well. But in terms of those processes, again, I think this is a question actually I posed to both Tom and Meg in previous episodes of this ground staff series. But in terms of those processes, so you mentioned overseeding, right? First and foremost, Brad, just for those who are new to this industry, what does that actually entail? What is overseeding as a concept?
So I think overseeding, a lot of grounds do, just to sort of give the soil a bit of a boost with regards to grass cover. In the winter months, it can get a bit thin, or some soil's not, seed hasn't germinated very well. And when it starts to get a little bit warmer, you'll bleck it. So that's like punching like little tiny holes in the ground. And that just gives a seedbed really for, the seed that you'll spread over. And it just sort of fills in areas that may have been failed to germinate or struggled to germinate or just thin in general. And you'll see it when the seed starts coming through after you've renovated where your bare areas will be and what your grass coverage will be like. And I think it is important to overseed because when you get to the season, you need a good grass coverage on top of your nets and your pitches. So, yeah, I think it's something we've done on every square at the utility bowl. And it's a very good process, very key to producing good pitches.
It certainly is. And funnily enough, I think that Tom actually mentioned that at length. And just for those who don't know who we're referring to, actually, when I mentioned the name Tom, that's Tom Cowley, who, of course, works at the utility bowl as well. A bit of a shout out is in need for Tom, really, because he was a fantastic 100%. Guest and taught me an awful lot, to be honest, about this industry, as did Meg Lay. So shout out to those two absolute legends of the groundskeeping industry. But in terms of another process as well, Brad, just before we touch upon your favourite one of the lot, there's another concept which is scarification, right? And again, this is something which is very common practice, regardless of sport, to be honest. So in terms of scarification as a process, what does that actually entail, just for those, again, who maybe aren't quite au fait or familiar with that particular term?
So scarification is sort of filtering through your deader, weaker grasses and your better grasses. And it also can help reduce thatch as well, which is a big layer of dead grass underneath the soil, which would obviously affect drainage. Scarification just, it kind of, it filters through all your good and bad grasses and takes up what you don't need and leaves down on the good stuff. It's a very good process of just, sorting out what you wouldn't need to leave in your square and what you need to take out just to avoid bare patches and, like I say, thatch producing, which obviously affect drainage and grass growth in a soil. So you want to get rid of it all if you can. And it's a very important process for, if anyone can scarify, you definitely want to be able to do that.
You certainly do. And to be honest, you can do it in your back garden, can't you, as well, if you want to promote lawn growth?
Yeah. So even with like a rake, you're still scarifying. You're standing in the grass, so you're dragging out all the grass that's dead. And, people could go in that back gardens and get a rake and they'll probably rack up a whole heap of it. And you can imagine what we do at professional grounds, you get trailer loads of it.
Absolutely. And in terms of the equipment for that, I mean, obviously, I was going to mention a rake because it is something you don't even think of that, do you? And yet that is part of this process. But do you actually have scarifiers, like specialist pieces of equipment at the utility bowl, or is it something different that you guys use?
So a rake is a good example, and that's essentially what it does. We have verticutters at the utility bowl, and they're quite good at scarifying and just taking things out. because they cut the grass in vertical directions, whereas a cylinder cuts it like the top of it. It goes down into the soil, so it digs out all the bad grass. There's a lot of equipment that people do use, and everyone's different in what they use. But I think people find what's best for them and go with it and see if it works. And yeah, like I say, we use verticutters quite often, going through the squares and if the outfield if possible. And it just sort of, you will pick up a lot of dead grass for sure. Stuff that you didn't think was even in there.
So in terms of that scarification process, actually, Brad, it's funny you mention about the thatch and finding weird and wonderful things in there. In terms of that thatch at a first-class venue, what do you usually find in that layer of grass?
So it's normally just dead grass, really. It's stuff that's below the surface. So we've got a machine called a TM1000, which will dig up below the surface and a bit on top as well. And it's normally just finding out what's below, which it really affects, like I said, the drainage as well. So the more you can scarify, the more you'll benefit yourself as well. And there's another process called verti-draining, which is another good way of promoting grass growth and root health and drainage again as well. And I think all those processes add up and you can see a massive benefit to it.
You certainly can. And it is just fascinating, isn't it? Because to be honest, a lot of people will go into these venues and they'll watch a day of cricket. And I think a lot of us don't actually appreciate just how much work and effort goes in to actually getting these surfaces up to standard. It's absolutely fascinating, to be honest. And I did promise that I'd ask this question, but in terms of those processes, right, with the likes of overseeding, scarification, verti-draining as well, cutting, stuff like that, what would you say is your favourite aspect of the job itself in terms of those pitch preparation processes?
The obvious would be cutting, and I think I do like cutting, especially like outfield and squares, because it makes a massive difference after you cut it. But to be honest, I do quite like when I use the verti cut. Like I say, it's that blade that you go over your square and you can take up a lot of grass that you don't think is there, and it's all lying down, so it cuts that all up. Yeah, it's very interesting to see what you take up. But probably mowing, I suppose.
Yeah, to be honest, mowing is a very, very common answer. And to be honest, Brad, it might be the answer to my next question. But we've spoken here a lot about the machinery, right, the more technical aspects of the industry itself. But this is the million-dollar question. And so far, it's mowers two, all of the pieces of equipment nil. For this particular question, but in terms of your favourite piece of equipment or machinery in your job, what would you say is your favourite one to use? Because there's so many, isn't there, in the ground staff's arsenal. So you've got rollers, you've got mowers, you've got the Clegg impact hammer as well, which, to be honest, I'm not holding out much hope will ever come up for this question. Honestly, it does seem to be one of those bogeymen in terms of
ground staff equipment.
And then, of course, you've got like moisture meters and pH probes. You've got all sorts, to be honest, in the toolkit. So what would you say is your favourite piece of equipment or machinery to use whilst you're on the job?
For me, I'd probably say our outfield mower that we use for the nursery ground. So the John Deere 5-unit fairway, a 7700 precision cut. I just really like it. I just love going on there, listening to music, chilling out, cutting the outfield, trying to get the lines as straight as I can. I think it's a nice machine to use as well. It's loud, but it's very nice. And people say cutting pitches about everything, but the outfield's got to look as good as well. And I just love using that one, really.
Fair play. But now it's 3-0 to the mowers. In this series, so to be honest, that lead will probably extend. I do have a feeling about that, but as you mentioned, it is just almost therapeutic, isn't it, being on a mower and cutting the grass and just seeing the efforts pay off with this pristine surface. And you mentioned there about having the playlist and the tunes in your ears, Brad. What's your go-to match day tune or match day playlist whilst you're on the mower?
Okay, so I'm a massive like indie music fan. I like 90s and early 2000s stuff. All the boys have probably hated for saying this, but I'd say they're Cortinas.
Okay.
I'm a massive fan of them. They're from Manchester. I like Oasis as well. Yeah, like indies, 90s sort of stuff. I can listen to it for hours on repeat, and, you know, it's just the best bit of music, really, I think, in my opinion.
Fair play, some nice choices. And the Cortinas always seem to play at Old Trafford, don't they? In terms
they
of
do,
concerts.
They do, yeah. Manchester, obviously. I've had them at the Aegeus Bowl before, last year. I come out, I think I was in the tunnel putting stumps away, and I heard the intro to it. I was like, is that... it is as well. And I was like, oh, it's probably the best thing ever that's happened. They played the Cortinas at the Aegeus Bowl, and I was like, get in.
Seriously, that is mad. Because obviously for me as a Warwickshire fan, I mean, we don't have concerts at Edgbaston. So I can't imagine something like that taking place. I mean, we have like the fireworks bonanza in November. We do have events on the outfield, but it must be quite cool actually having a concert like that. I know that quite a few counties do it. Obviously, Lancs are probably the biggest one, aren't they? Because they've had tons of concerts in recent years. But
Yeah,
it must be very, very cool. And actually, Brad, that has led me beautifully onto my next question. Right, before we discuss the more difficult aspects of the role itself and maybe discuss the future as well, but in terms of your time at the Utility Bowl so far, if you could just relive one day from your life on this job to date, what would you say has been your personal highlights on the Hampshire ground staff, whether that's from a cricket perspective or whether it was that concert with the Cortinas, right? What would you say has been your personal highlight from your time on the South Coast so far?
I think there's been quite a few. Obviously, we had the Arctic Monkeys last year, which is quite impressive setup. But going more in towards the job side of things, I'd probably have to go back to the World Test Championship final we had in 2021. And that was my first season. I only just started then. So I started on the 3rd of June, 2021. I think I was 2 weeks before the start of the game, or maybe a week and a half. So the preparation, I can't really go back to one day specifically, but I suppose the first day of the World Test Championship final. I think it's a special moment for me, really. Being my first year, my first massive event, and my first test match as well. I think that was one that stands out for me, really. We had really good weather leading up to it, so everything was really dry and getting a bit brown. Obviously, we kept on top as much as we could. As soon as the game came, it started raining. So that's exactly what we knew would happen. But, I think the effort from all of us that week was just unbelievable, really. We had a reserve day, so we had basically a six-day test match if we needed 6 days. We did in the end, but we got a result, and I think that was, you know, probably we should all be really proud of what happened that week. And it just goes to show, you know, the facilities we have, the equipment we have with the hover cover and all the run-up sheets we had, the staff we had, it just shows you can put on a really good show and, you know, pay the price for what we all invest in, really, and what everyone else invests in. You know, the crowd we had from India and New Zealand was really good turnout. And it just shows, to give them a game of cricket, it's what it's all about and what you do the job for.
It is, isn't it? That is the ultimate satisfaction. And in particular for a showpiece event like that. I mean, this was being broadcast to billions worldwide, wasn't it? It's a massive, massive event. The first ever World Test Championship final as well, if I might just add. So this was the inaugural one.
Yes.
In this competition. That just elevates it even more. And Brad, this might be an interesting question, actually, but I don't think I actually asked this to either Tom or Meg, and in hindsight, I probably should have, but for those international fixtures, right, because down at the Utility Bowl, you do have test matches, ODIs, T20Is as well. Do you feel more pressure to actually exceed expectations on those days? Because a lot of people might think of pressure, and they'll think it's on the players and coaches, but for you guys on the ground staff, if that surface isn't up to par or isn't up to standard, you hear about it, don't you? And if you make a mistake, I mean, to just touch upon one in the past year, I think back to the England-Ireland ODI in Bristol, and they got absolutely hammered. They took so many pelters on social media for something which was out of their control, I've never seen so much rain in Bristol in my life, and yet you just saw the reaction, and people had a lot of things to say about the speed of reaction and response on that particular day. So in terms of those international fixtures, do you feel there is an extra level of pressure to actually succeed on those days?
100%. I think if you're looking down specifically at the surface, I think obviously Simon is the one who prepares the pitch, and it's up to him what he does and what happens. It's mainly down to him. But I think for us as a team, and specifically me as an individual, I feel a bit of added pressure with everything I do around the ground, putting up nets, remarking lines, because everything's on TV, everything's being watched by 25,000 at the ground and millions over on the TV. And like you go back to the Bristol last year, I spoke to Meg quite recently after that, and she was just heartbroken, really, because she's just trying to do her job. And, you know, at Bristol, they haven't got hover cover, so it's hard for them. And she said by the time that they pulled the sheets on, there's water everywhere, and so the sheets are heavy, and it's just the pressure, it does add up. And people look at good pitches and say that's a good pitch, or not much gets said about it. But as soon as there's a bad pitch made, you know, you shout about it, really. And anything, I guess, if anything happens to the ground staff, if anything leaks underneath, or, you know, it is that added pressure, on, especially on bigger match days where you have more people in, the financial stakes are higher, and the TV rights. And yeah, it's just, there's a lot more goes into it. But I think every match, you should always feel that pressure. But for certainly for internationals and TV matches, is that just that little extra bit of what's in the back of your mind and trying to keep your head down and get straight through the day, really.
Definitely. And it's important to note that as well, in terms of ground staff up and down the country. It's the level of passion and love for this industry that's apparent for everyone to see. You know, this is a difficult job. And I know that so far we haven't really touched upon that in too much detail, Brad. We will get onto that in a few moments' time. But the individuals in this industry absolutely love it, right? This is a passion, isn't it? It's not just a job. It's not just a career in that sense. It really is a labour of love. And you just look at, I'll use the Worcestershire ground staff as an example. You think of everything that they've gone through this winter.
Yeah.
I don't know how they've done it personally. The fact that New Road has flooded, I think, 4 or 5 times in the space of these past 5-6 months. And yet they're still going, and they will get those surfaces prepared for the season. I know it's not quite at the start of the season, and they're having to play a couple of home matches in Kidderminster. But honestly, that is a testament to their hard work. And it is a difficult job. It's a hard job, okay, in terms of the physical demands, the physical toils. And of course, if things do go wrong, you've got the eyes of the world looking at you, right? Whether that might be county cricket or indeed on those international fixtures, at times it is a very, very thankless career. And in terms of those more tough and difficult aspects, Brad, what do you say is the most difficult aspects of your job? Because there's so many different things which come into consideration. And I think the big one, the arch enemy of any British ground staff, is the weather, because at times it's absolutely appalling. But in terms of the job itself, what do you say is the most difficult element of being on a county ground staff?
I think standards is a very good thing. There's a difference in the fine line between making yourself look a really nice ground and things you can do to make things look better. And I think everyone should please themselves with that. I think everyone tries their hardest. Like you say, people have passion for the job. They love the job. It's an art, in fact. It's an art. I think you can't really divert the fact away from the weather. It is. You just look at, you speak to every ground staff, they've got about 5 or 6 weather apps. I struggle to think of things that's hard about the job. You know, it isn't easy, but things just happen. But one thing you can speak to any groundsman about is that they hate about the job is definitely the weather. Just looking at, so like I said earlier, we had the World Test Championship. We had a perfect build up. It was sunny. We had nice pitches to practice on. And as soon as the test match come, that Friday, I think it was, it just rained and rained. I think the first day was a washout. The second day we were in at, you know, 5 o'clock in the morning pushing water off the sheets. And it's hard work. It is really hard work. But again, you just do it for the love of the job and the love of the game, really.
You do, and I think that's the important takeaway from the podcast, isn't it? And to be honest, from this entire series of episodes, because honestly, I think that people need to show a bit more respect and gratitude to ground staff. They are the unsung and underappreciated heroes of the county circuit, aren't they? Because without their hard work, without their toil, we don't have a product to enjoy, right? Because the County Championship, the Metro Bank One Day Cup, the T20 Blast, the Charlotte Edwards Cup, and the Rachel Hayhoe Flint Trophy are only as good as the surfaces on which they're played on. If every single one was played on a dreadful surface, right, which was poorly maintained and not looked after properly, we wouldn't get to see these wonderful knocks, would we? These incredible centuries, yeah. These match-winning efforts. We wouldn't have a county circuit as we know it. So I do think it's important to just show an appreciation of all of the hard work which goes into this industry. And in terms of the community elements of this career as well, Brad, I know you mentioned beforehand about having a chat with Meg, but there's a real camaraderie, isn't there, across the country when it comes to county ground staff, and there's even the interlinking of ideas between different industries in this job. So I know a lot of ground staff talk to golf greenskeepers or rugby ground staff or football ground staff as well. There's a lot of sharing of ideas because, as you mentioned, this is an art. It's a niche. This is a specialised, skilled craft at the end of the day. So in terms of the community, I know that obviously you're still relatively early in your journey. You're approaching your fourth season in the job as of this recording. But in terms of the ground staff community, how have they been since you've started this career?
I've had a lot of people speak to me in regards to just general support and like people liking stuff, and you know, speaking to Meg was quite a good thing because she's come out in the ground staff world as quite a big thing, and fair play to her, she's done a lot for the industry itself, and I think that's a massive thing. You have people like that, it sort of brings it all together, and you go back to camaraderie, saying like what happens at Worcester and Bristol last year. You need them sort of people to sort of give you a bit of a cheer up message, and you know, you never give up really with the job. It's one of those that grass is going to grow regardless of what happens, and if you do your best, it will all come together in the end. You just sort of, you find your people that along the way who support you really well, and you know, you always got someone to talk to, and I think that's important. I think every groundsman you speak to will always have issues in the back of their mind with regards to pitches and stuff. And I think it's important to talk about it because it is, like you say, we are the unsung heroes of county cricket. Without a pitch, you get no cricket. And I think it is definitely important to speak to people if you've ever got worries about your job in regards to groundskeeping, because everyone's different. Everyone's in a different situation at every ground. Everyone could be better in their ways, but sometimes you just got to look back and say, I've done my best. I've done really well. And I think, you know, there's not much more I could have done.
100%. And to be honest, I think everybody gets like that in life in general.
Yeah.
Because it's the exact same with us in broadcasting as well. I mean, I had literally last night, right, we had a nightmare broadcast for a local football side because our equipment got water damaged, right? So we literally couldn't carry on the broadcast. You do have these difficult days, but it comes back to the strength of that support network. And you do find in an industry like groundskeeping, or whether it's my own broadcasting, there are people who are there to mentor you and to give you advice and to help you when things haven't quite gone your way. And in that similar vein of questioning, actually, Brad, just before we get on to the future, when we wrap up what's been an incredibly interesting episode of the podcast, I've really enjoyed this, to be honest. But in terms of that mentorship and those senior figures, who do you say in your journey so far on the Hampshire ground staff, who do you say has been your biggest mentor or role model in a groundskeeping capacity, or even if there's a few, right? Because I'm guessing the entirety of the crew down there have done a great job and put you on the right path. But in terms of those real mentors, who do you say has had a big influence on your journey in this career?
Yeah, I'd definitely say Cowley, Tom. He's so obviously at the utility bar, we've got two pitches. Tom's deputy, so he takes more charge of the nursery round, and that's where I spend my time with him. And he's taught me everything I know. He's always been someone to talk to, you know, and he's told me some really good advice in regards to groundsman preparation and off the field as well. Yeah, I'd definitely say Tom. I think he's just a really nice guy and someone who's very dedicated to the job. He loves it as much as anyone else does. Cares about it so much. You can see when he's a bit down if something he's having got in his way. And that shows passion. It shows dedication, really. An incredible groundsman, I can say for the least. And yeah, I'd definitely say Tom has been my sort of mentor. I think all the team down at the utility bar in Southampton have been really good with me as an apprentice starting this year. I started obviously 3 years ago, 21 as a 16-year-old kid. It's a lot of pressure, you know, because you want to sort of hit off the blocks running. And I think you sort of learn things along the way. It's a slowish process. But if you have the right people around you, which I'm sure a lot of counties do, it makes your journey a lot easier and for sure a lot better to know that you've got people to talk to and people that are giving you the right advice, and 100% is just a very nice feeling to have.
It certainly is, and that leads me very, very well, actually, onto my next question. It might actually be the penultimate question of the podcast, Brad, but as someone who's been in this industry, as you mentioned, since you were 16 years old and has now been in it for a number of seasons now, what advice would you give to someone who's just starting out in this industry in terms of what they can expect, in terms of what this job actually might hold in store for them? If you could go back and, let's say, rewind the clock back to when you were that fresh-faced 16-year-old and you're starting your journey as a member of the crew at the Utility Bowl, what advice would you give to anybody who's just starting out on this career path?
I think you've got to look at the rough and the smooth. Like I say, you get them days that are horrible, wintry, cold, wet. But you get them days where the ground's looking really nice. I remember as a 16-year-old kid, you know, walking around the ground taking pictures all the time. And I think that's the sort of thing that sort of inspires you, is really just what it could look like. And, you know, you're the one, you're not the boss, but you're one who's making those efforts to make the ground look as good as it does. And every contribution you make is a massive... massive part of the county circuit, internationals if you have them, and there's plenty of progression, definitely, you know, with the GMA and other grounds looking for people. It's not the easiest industry, but it's definitely one, if you have a passion for cricket and you like machinery and working outdoors, it's definitely one to go down. You meet a load of players, coaches, they're all really friendly as well, and I think it's just one thing I'd say is just keep going with it. Just if you like the job, keep going at it, really, because things will come your way. And yeah, it's just one of those where you've got to really love the job, to be honest. If you don't like it within months, you'll definitely realize straight away. But the people that do, they're the ones that really put their heart down for the ground and trying their best every day.
Yeah, they do. And it's a vocation, isn't it? To be honest, it's not just your standard career, is it, being a groundsman, but it is a very, very rewarding career. And to be honest, mate, I'm glad that you've had such a good time on the South Coast so far. And obviously some big things to come in the future, as you mentioned about progression. There are so many opportunities, and it's not just in cricket either. As I mentioned earlier on in the podcast, I mean, look at someone like Ben Cotton. He started out at his local cricket club preparing the pitch, and now he's working in golf, which is, again, two industries which you wouldn't think there'd be too much interlink in between, but that there is. There is, because a lot of the practices are actually very similar, if not the exact same. So there's different opportunities. Even if you start out in cricket, it doesn't necessarily mean that you're going to spend 40 years right working at a first-class venue. You could go on to work in football or rugby or tennis or golf, any of these other outdoor sports. there is a lot of opportunity for progression. But as you mentioned, Brad, it's definitely one which you have to have a love, a passion, a real desire for, because it is difficult at times. The standards are incredibly high. Yeah. But if you do nail it, as I said, I don't think there can be many better feelings, to be honest, in the game of cricket, because you know that you've helped prepare the pitch for a spectacle, whether that's in international cricket or first-class cricket or whatever, to be honest. It really must be an absolutely tremendous emotion. And in terms of that future for yourself, Brad, if you don't mind me saying, I think you come across as a very ambitious individual in terms of your progression so far at the Utility Bowl, and I'm guessing you've got some lofty aspirations in the future. But in terms of your future as a member of the ground staff and in this industry, what are you looking to achieve, not only heading into the summer of 2024, but also in the years beyond? What would you like your ideal career path to look like, per se?
I think other people would have different views, but for me, I'd like to become more independent. Since I have my apprenticeship, trying to gain my qualification, and then, you know, sort of have that trust of, you know, looking after pitches. And I think, like I say, it's baby steps. You've got to take one by one. And definitely for me, it is gaining more independence and learning that preparation for pitches, definitely. I think it comes, you get recognised by the counties or your bosses, that you're sort of up and coming and you've got a good way of working and prepare good pitches. And I think things sort of fall to you in that industry because it's not the most popular. I think, like I say, it sort of falls to you. If you're a good groundsman that's preparing good pitches and a good ethic, it will come to you for sure. So I think just looking at the next year and trying to gain more knowledge for me personally, I think is what my next step would probably be.
Well, Brad, it goes without saying, mate, but obviously myself and everybody associated here at the Counter Cricket Podcast are wishing yourself and, of course, the rest of the ground staff down at the Utility Bowl all the very best of luck, not only heading into this summer, but, of course, the years beyond as well. And just judging by that description, again, I think that is a really good attitude to have, to be honest, because it is a craft, it's an art, and it takes years to fully master. This is the learning process, isn't it? It's a bit like almost when we talk about young cricketers who are just starting out in their early days, and you know, you say that they get better over time, and it's true, isn't it? You get better every single season that you experience. You gain extra knowledge, right? You get better at this craft and better in this industry, and who knows what the future has in store as well, because as you mentioned, there are so many opportunities in this particular line of work. And we mentioned Meg Lay a lot on this podcast, but she's now working at Lords, right? She's now gone from, in the space of 2.5 years, from a farming background in Canterbury, back home in New Zealand. She hadn't even thought of entering this industry. And now she's working at the home of cricket, right? And there are so many success stories like that in this industry. There is a lot of room for progression. And if you want to go and explore different avenues, there is space to do exactly that. So obviously wishing you all the very best of luck for the future, mate. And yeah, should Thank be a cracking much. Season, shouldn't it? 2024, just to end on a county cricket note, right? Just before we do say our final goodbyes for the recording, Brad, I want to get a prediction, right? Because on our preview shows, we've mentioned at length about the strength of this Hampshire side across all three competitions. So County Championship, Metro Bank One Day Cup, and T20 Blast. How do you reckon the Rose and Crown will get on across competitions this season?
Good question. I think championship-wise, I think we'll finish... I don't think we'll win. I think we'll finish third. I think Surrey will win it again, unfortunately. I'm not sure who will finish second, but I think we'll finish third. I don't know why, but I just have that feeling. Metro Bank, One Day Cup. I think we will be a semi-final job. I think we just need... It's a struggle with 100, really, because we lose all our best players to the 100. But we've got some up-and-coming youngsters, so hopefully that's something that can help boost our squad. Vitality Blast, I think, again, we'll make finals day. I'm going to say we're going to win the Blast. We've got Vincey, who's one of the best opening batters in the county circuit and in, well, the Blast itself in T20 limited format. Some of the ball striking I've seen from him in the innings I've watched is incredible. And I think we've got Woody as well. He's a very good tail end bowler. We made a couple of signings, Nazim Al Haq. I think, yeah, you know, it's hard to say now, but watching now, I'd probably say we got a good chance of winning it again.
It's a very, very strong squad, isn't it? Let's face it, across formats. And yeah, Michael Neeser as well, another one of those newcomers playing primarily in the T20 Blast, might be available for a couple of championship matches, but it does look like the makings of a strong team and another memorable campaign in 2024. We'll have to wait and see, though. Only time will tell. You know, will they repeat the heroics of 2022 in the Blast, and can they finally win the county championship for the first time in 51 years?
So.
You know, the championship, that's been the one, hasn't it? It's eluded Hampshire in recent seasons. They've been up there and battling for that title, but yeah, that drought just seems to continue every single season. It's over 50 years now, but yeah, I must say, I do think it'll be a good campaign. And I'm also hoping that Hampshire and Warwickshire do not face off against each other in a white ball format this season, because it always tends to go horribly for my Bears. So the less we see of the Hawks this year in the Blast or the One Day Cup, the better, to be honest, and the better our chances of winning a trophy. But again, only time will tell. It's going to be an absolute blockbuster of a summer across all three competitions. And of course, we here at the Counter Cricket Podcast will be there to take you through every single step of those three wonderful competitions. But Brad, I think that is a wonderful place to wrap up what's been a thoroughly, thoroughly fascinating episode of TCCP. So just before we say our final goodbyes for the recording, do you have anything to plug or promote? Any social media channels, websites, businesses, anything like that?
So I'm mainly on Twitter and TikTok. So my Twitter handle is Brad_Francis1. And TikTok, I think Brad_Francis1 again, all lowercase. So yeah, that's mainly what I post on. Sort of trying to grow into social media and get links with other ground staff. And I think it's important we sort of share what we have in the industry, really, because people don't see what happens behind the scenes. And obviously only match days is sort of where they get to see what we do. And it's interesting to some not, but you know, I do it for just passion, really. But yeah, that's Brad_Francis1 on Twitter and TikTok.
Well, there you go, folks. So if you want to go and give Brad a follow on either of those social media platforms, we will, of course, leave the links to both of those channels in the podcast description below. But that is it from myself and Brad for today's episode of the Counter Cricket Podcast. To each and every single one of you wonderful listeners out there, thank you ever so much for tuning in. And as always, guys, we'll see you on the next one.